On the one-year anniversary of the Parkland shooting, there are students, parents, and teachers experiencing some form of anxiety or trauma. How can we help them? Hello and welcome to Sundial. Today we're also joined by listeners on our sister station, WGCU in Fort Myers. We welcome you. Well, today's show, it's impossible to escape the gun debate whenever you talk about a school shooting. Democrat Congressman Ted Deutsch, whose district encompasses Parkland, is pushing gun control legislation, and we'll talk to him about it today. Also, there's a new book out called Parkland Speaks. It's a collection of letters, poems, and more from the survivors of the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas shooting. We spoke with a teacher who edited the book and two of the students who contributed.
After the shooting, all of my emotions were so raw, and, you know, I turned to writing as my outlet.
And finally, on a day like today, what's the best way to talk with children and each other about how we feel over the issue of a school shooting? All of that today on Sundial. First, the news. We know a change is
near. Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm Lakshmi Singh. People at more than 1,000 schools across Florida are remembering lives lost and lives forever changed 1 year ago today when a young gunman ambushed his old classmates and teachers at Parkland's Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School. He killed 17 people, 14 of them were students. Linda Bagel Schulman lost her son Michael in the attack. Like other parents, she says the country needs common sense gun laws.
When you speak to anybody, whether it's the right or the left or the north or the south or the east or the west or the a Jew or a Christian, a Muslim, an atheist, ask anybody, do you want to be safe? Find one person who'll answer you and say no.
This morning, hundreds of thousands of people observed a moment of silence some 4 hours earlier than when the attack had actually occurred a year ago. They paused at 10:17 to commemorate the 17 lives taken last Valentine's Day. Venezuela's opposition envoys in Washington are trying to drum up more aid to their country, even though President Nicolas Maduro's government is blocking it. NPR's Michelle Kellerman reports on a conference being held today.
The U.S. is backing National Assembly President Juan Guaido, calling him Venezuela's interim president and trying to help him get aid to the country. Guaido's envoy in Washington, Carlos Vecchio, says everyone needs to knock on doors and windows to get the aid in. But that's not all, he says, through an interpreter.
We are cognizant of the fact that in order to resolve the problem, the dictatorship has got to end. There is no other way.
Dozens of countries have recognized Guaido as Venezuela's legitimate leader, though Maduro calls him a U.S. puppet. Michelle Kellerman, NPR News, the State Department.
The latest numbers on U.S. retail sales are out, showing they fell in December 1.2% from the month before. Numbers are a sign of slower economic momentum at the end of last year, but as NPR's Shannon Van Sant tells us, it contrasts with other figures showing a healthy job market.
Retail sales posted the biggest drop since 2009, with even e-commerce sites suffering declines. Ward McCarthy, chief financial economist at Jefferies, describes the figures as a head-scratcher.
The weakness in the December retail sales, if taken literally, would be quite troubling. However, they lie in such a sharp contrast with the strength in the labor market.
Ann McCarthy says the numbers are at odds with consumer borrowing numbers. The partial government shutdown began on December 22nd, late in the month, and likely had little impact on the December sales. Department store purchases were also down 3.3% in December, the most since January 2016. Shannon Van Sant, NPR News.
This is NPR News. Amazon.com is scrubbing its plans to build a headquarters in Queens. Today, a spokeswoman for the online retail giant confirmed to NPR that Amazon's decision is not reversible. She says there are no plans for further negotiations, and it does not intend to search for a new location for a second HQ2 location. Amazon had encountered swift criticism from local politicians in New York who oppose a nearly $3 billion in incentives promised to Amazon. The World Health Organization warns measles cases are surging in all regions of the world because many children are not being vaccinated against this preventable disease. Lisa Schlein reports WHO is calling for urgent action to stop the continued spread of this highly contagious and sometimes deadly disease.
Nearly 230,000 cases of measles have been reported for 2018 to the World Health Organization. However, WHO expert Catherine O'Brien says the number of reported cases represents less than 10% of the actual cases.
So we're not talking about, hundreds of thousands of cases that are actually occurring. We're talking about millions of cases that are actually occurring.
Africa is one of the hot spots. Since October, Madagascar has been struggling to contain a huge measles outbreak that so far has killed more than 900 children. WHO reports measles cases in Europe have tripled due to many ongoing cases in Ukraine. For NPR News, I'm Lisa Schlein in Geneva.
The Dow is down 30 points. I'm Lakshmi Singh, NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations. Other contributors include Subaru, featuring the all-new three-row Ascent, with seating for up to eight and a choice of second-row captain's chairs. Love, it's what makes a Subaru a Subaru. Learn more at Subaru.com.
The all-star Donnie McCaslin Quartet plays South Florida Jazz at Bailey Hall on Saturday, February 16th at 8 p.m. on the Broward College Davie campus. Pat Metheny calls Donnie McCaslin the leading saxophonist and musical pioneer of his generation. Tickets at baileyhall.org, southfloridajazz.org, or 954-201-6884. Presented by South Florida Jazz and funded in part by the Broward Cultural Division.
Hello and welcome to Sundial. I'm Luis Hernandez. Thank you so much for joining us today. And we want to welcome the listeners of our sister station, WGCU, in Fort Myers and Naples. Thank you for allowing us the opportunity to share with you our coverage of the one-year anniversary of the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas shooting. We're devoting an entire program not to look back on that horrible day, but how people are moving forward. Today, victims are being memorialized in vigils and services across South Florida and all over the country. Now, last week, we spoke with Marjorie Stoneman Douglas students, Lainey Steinhardt, Nadia Murillo, and English teacher and yearbook advisor Sarah Lerner at the Northwest Regional Public Library in Coral Springs. All three contributed stories to this new book called Parkland Speaks, Survivors of Marjorie Stoneman Douglas Shooting Share Their Stories. Lerner edited the book, by the way. Now, the book is a collection of poetry, prose, photographs, drawings, and more from 43 students and faculty at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School. Now, they shared their experiences on the day of the tragedy and their ongoing recovery and activism. We began our conversation with Sarah telling us about how people at the school are feeling leading up to that day.
The vibe at school is very different. Everybody feels very tense, very anxious, higher absenteeism leading up to it. But like I said, nobody knows exactly what to expect because we haven't gone through this before. So you only know what you've seen with Columbine or with Sandy Hook or Pulse or Las Vegas. You know, you don't know what the day will actually be for us.
So let's get into the book. It's a compilation of 43 students and teachers who were there. Where did the idea originate?
I was approached by the senior editor at Random House, who is the cousin of one of the students who was in my Intro to Journalism class last year, and she is currently on my yearbook staff. And she, the senior editor at Random House, reached out to me and said that she had this idea for this kind of anthology work of poetry and journals and stories and artwork, photography, and asked if I wanted to be involved in the project. So I jumped on it. Then she and I spoke about the different types of topics that we wanted to cover, the different types of styles of writing that we wanted to have. And that's when I started to reach out to the students and, you know, just asked if they wanted to participate. And if they did, I really left it open to them.
So it sounds like there was never a moment of hesitancy. You wanted to do this. There was never any question, yeah, I'll jump on it. Let's do this.
Yeah, I was in from the get-go because I knew it would be something important. And as the yearbook advisor, I know how important something, a book like this would be. It's a time capsule. It shows exactly what we were feeling that day, what we felt in the weeks and months after. And reading through that book, it comes back like it was yesterday.
Lainey, you have a passion for journalism and storytelling, and I understand you want to pursue a career in mass communications. Why was it important for you to tell your story? And you did it in a letter
to Marco Rubio.
After the shooting, all of my emotions were so raw, and, you know, I turned to writing as my outlet, and what that my thoughts ended up becoming was an angry letter to my local congressman and woman demanding, why did this happen? Because, you know, no one in my life knew why this could have happened to a safe community like Parkland. These words really gave me power, something that I didn't initially have after the shooting. I felt so powerless, and that was really important to me. And, you know, I really see that if you want to get solutions to problems or you want to get answers, you know, you have to do it. You can't have other people wait around or wait around for someone to tell you, oh, this happened because of this. Like, I need to do it on my own.
You want to be a journalist, and I'm curious your thoughts on what our job as journalists should be in a situation like this. And I wonder what you think about how journalists have covered this story.
After the shooting, you know, I saw, as I addressed it, as, you know, both the negative and the positive side of journalism. You know, I saw the negative side, the ones prancing on our backs, but walking to school on the first day, just getting a little, like, clip of us saying, oh, hi, I'm going back to school this day, or I'm sad because of this. You know, they really didn't see our full emotions, and they just wanted a picture to a story, which I didn't really love, and it really made me feel kind of just thrown around in this huge trauma that happened. But then there's also the great side of journalism that gives a platform to activism.
So, Nadia, I want to get a sense from you about what Valentine's Day meant to you before last year, and now, because of everything, can you see the holiday the same way?
Well, I think everyone always celebrated a Valentine's Day, even if you, like, had a boyfriend or not. I always celebrated, like, just celebrating, like, love with all my friends and all that kind of stuff. All throughout school, just spread, like, happiness and love. But now that I think about it, I still think of Valentine's Day, like, oh, happiness and love. But then you start to think of the shooting and then, you know, just, like, trauma, I guess, and a life-changing day.
Why do you think it was important to share your story by retelling the events? Why did you want to do that?
Well, many of us students, we were all in, I guess you could say, different places throughout the shooting. A lot of us had different perspectives, and I just wanted to, like give my perspective. You know, many people think that because if you were in a certain location that it was different for you, but in reality, I feel that no matter where you were during that shooting, I just feel that it was just the same. Mentally, yes, but physically, no. I just feel that everyone just needed to hear different perspectives, and I felt like everyone needed to hear mine as well.
You had the opportunity to be interviewed by CNN. Did you see that as an important platform to say something? Because, I mean, it's CNN. Everybody in the country is going to see you.
It was a perfect way to, like, tell the world about, like, you know, how I'm feeling after the shooting, about, like, what happened and what needs to be changed in order for other school shootings to be prevented. And it was, like, a week after the shooting, so I was still in shock. Like, people might not think it would take a few weeks, but, yeah, I was still in shock for a while.
You know, what's interesting, it goes to what Lainey was saying, is, like, mm-hmm. you guys grew up in the social media
yeah.
world. Mm-hmm. So everything that was going out over CNN and everybody else, mm-hmm. everybody's talking about it. Did you go on Twitter or Facebook or any of these to see what people were saying, and were you having conversations?
I didn't reach out to anyone. Like, I would do a few tweets here and there, but I wasn't very involved, only because I don't like to say the wrong things, and I feel like sometimes I like to say the wrong thing. And I also just don't like to be just such a strong activist.
You're hearing our conversation with Marjorie Stoneman Douglas students Lainey Steinhardt, Nadia Murillo, and English teacher Sarah Lerner. All three contributed to the new book, Parkland Speaks, which tells the stories of MSD students and faculty in the aftermath of the shooting. We spoke with them last week at the Coral Springs Public Library.
What issues did you have with the way that the media covered the story?
First and foremost, I think just plainly saying his name in headlines, that's just, it's in our face, you know. We're always on social media as teenagers, and to be scrolling through feeds once you're finally, you know, in a good place, and then just to see his face or see the shooter's name, you know, it just brings you back. And it's a very challenging dilemma that, you know, that we're in, to be kind of in this bubble that is now the Parkland shooting, and it's hard to escape it sometimes. So for it to be always in our face is not the greatest feeling. You know, there were some news outlets, like Nadia was saying about CNN, how they're very understanding about everything and very comforting. But then there was the news outlets that just weren't. And still to this day, sometimes, you know, we're coming around the year anniversary and you'll see, you know, news trucks with, like, their cameras just taking videos of us walking to school. And my brother will make a comment and they're like, they have all their footage they need. Like, why are they here? I always joke with friends, too, is like, if I'm walking out of school and I see a news van taking videos of us, and I was like, there's either A, another shooting somewhere happening, B, a court hearing happening, or C, some form of anniversary that popped up of someone's birthday. No positive trait is affiliated with any of it.
The part with the media that I have issue, and again, as a journalism teacher and a former high school journalist myself, I get that reporters are just trying to do their job. It's the sensationalizing of it. And there was a story written by a newspaper that I won't name on your program. And the reporter ran a story online that was solely based on tweets. There were no quotes. There were no sources. This was the entire story. And if my students had done something like that in my class, they would have failed. But this is what's being passed off as journalism by this reporter with this local publication. That's the part that bothers me. And when you drive up and you see the news trucks outside of school, it just puts you right back to where you were.
Sarah, let me ask you, because not just being part of this, I mean, you have your own story.
I have two pieces in the book, and the one up front is talking about that day. There's a picture that I had tweeted earlier in the morning where I'm in my heart leggings, and I was joking that I was like ruining my students' Valentine's Day because I was giving a quiz to my seniors so I would leave little Hershey kisses on their desks so they wouldn't hate me forever. I wanted to share my story, just like Nadia said, because we all had different perspectives and different locations and vantage points of the event. Unlike the students in the book, I'm a mom and I have two children, and my son was at the middle school next door and texted me because he's on lockdown and he was scared, and I had to tell him I'm okay, I'm not shot, and to text my husband and my mom. And you know, as soon as I got back up to my room, my phone was blowing up. Anyone who's ever had my number was texting me. So I wanted to share my experience that day, but also what it meant to come back to school and have to finish the yearbook.
Interesting question as an editor.
Yes.
So you have to go back, you have to work with them to improve the piece. What was it like when you're editing these pieces?
With some of the pieces and some of the contributors, it was much more difficult than with others. We had a really great piece by someone who was in one of the classrooms on the first floor, and it went through the first round of editing, and she just didn't feel comfortable editing any further, was happy with the way that it was, felt that that was her truth, and to make any more changes, however slight, would have changed the meaning behind her piece. So she decided to pull it, which I can't fault her for. You know, those are her feelings, and 2-3 months after, it was still very raw and real to her. But through all of the rounds of edits and all of the, you know, I'm sorry, this isn't me, this is what the publisher said, let me try and smooth things over and help you, it turned out so, so nicely. And I'm just proud of them for sharing their stories. I'm thankful that Random House trusted me to collect and put it together. And I love this book.
That was Marjorie Stoneman Douglas, English teacher and yearbook advisor Sarah Lerner. We also heard from students Lainey Steinhardt and Nadia Murillo. Now, all three contributed to this new book, Parkland Speaks, a compilation of stories from 43 students and faculty from Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High. We asked each of the students to share a portion of their pieces for us to record. Now, Nadia's story explains her experience that day. She was texting with her mother throughout the shooting. And her mother, by the way, works at Coral Springs Fire Department. But Nadia decided not to record. Now, here are excerpts we're going to listen to from Lainey Steinhardt's letter to Senator Marco Rubio and Sarah Lerner's experience on campus that day. Now, after the break, we're going to come back and continue our conversation with all three of them. You're listening to Sundial.
Dear Senator Marco Rubio, my name is Lainey Steinhardt, and I'm currently a 10th grade student at Marjorie Stoneman Douglas High School in Parkland, Florida. On February 14th, I ran for my life in fear that I would lose it. I called my parents one last time to tell them that I loved them, just in case I never got to again. I heard gunshots go off and chaos around me. Why does this sound like a war zone? This is a school I'm talking about. More importantly, my school that I'm talking about. Allow me to reintroduce myself. My name is Lainey Steinhardt, and I am a survivor of a school shooting. That is a sentence no 16-year-old should have to write.
After tragedy strikes, people respond differently. Some take pictures, some find food, some exercise, some retreat, some write. Watching my students find their voices after someone tried to silence them was impressive. Perhaps that's an understatement. It was awe-inspiring, it was brave, it was courageous. They turned their grief into words, into pictures, into something that helped them begin the healing process. They created something that will be kept for the rest of their lives.
You threw my city away. You tore down the walls and opened up all the gates.
You can enjoy Gardens by Moonlight at Vizcaya Museum and Gardens on Wednesday, February 20th at 6 p.m. You can watch the moonrise, take a tour, and wander the gardens at this midweek retreat. Learn more at VizcayaTickets.org.
Festival of the Arts Boca will present Star Wars: A New Hope with live orchestra, Gershwin's Rhapsody in Blue, the rollicking band Pink Martini, members of the Bolshoi Ballet and Russian National Orchestra, Miami's New Deco Ensemble, and jazz trumpeter Arturo Sandoval. The Authors and Ideas series features Doris Kearns Goodwin, Robert Pinsky, Jeffrey Rosen, David Sanger, and a film and expert panel discussion on global public health. Information and tickets at festivalboca.org or 866-571-ARTS. WLRN lives on radio, but not just radio, on social media and the web. Like us on Facebook and find more news and entertainment. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram and download the WLRN app. Wherever you are, we are too.
Welcome back to Sundial. I'm Luis Hernandez. We are airing as usual on WLRN in South Florida, but today we're also talking with listeners in Southwest Florida through our sister station, WGCU in Fort Myers and Naples. Thanks so much again for joining us today. Now let's go back to our conversation that we were having with students Lainey Steinhardt and Nadia Murillo, and English teacher and yearbook advisor Sarah Lerner from Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School. They are some of the contributors to the new book, Parkland Speaks. Now that's a collection of stories, poems, letters, photographs, and more collected from the students and faculty from the school. And we're going to start this part of the conversation talking about the activism that came up after the shooting.
I feel that many people just don't believe in the young people. Like, many people didn't believe in many of the activists. They think that we're just, like, stupid little high schoolers and that we're just trying to do anything that we can to get popular. But if you see, many of these activists are really, they're doing things. Many laws have been passed. There have been many different things. And I just feel that it was a perfect opportunity for us to show the world who we really are and that we are intelligent and that we are able to show, like, that we're able to get our word out, and at the same time we're not showing that we're just stupid little kids that want to, I don't know, find any way for people to, like, listen to us. You know, the young people will win.
I think Congress, like, fails to realize that, like, they're always like, oh, like, you know, why should I listen to a high school student, like what Nadia was saying. But, you know, I think they fail to realize that this is the prime time where we're learning about, you know, our amendment rights and you know, all our freedoms that we have. And I think as high school students, always being told what to do, I think it's just super frustrating. You know, we're in a restricted environment, like high school, we're teenagers, you know, we're going through the process of life. And I think to be told, like, no, you can't do this because you're too young, just makes us want to scream louder and use our words and fight back, because, you know, that's what teenagers do. You know, we rebel against people who tell us that you can't do something.
Before this, and I want to hear from both of you, before this, did you ever pay attention to politics? Whether in the news, online, did you ever pay attention to what's going on in Tallahassee or in Congress?
You know, unfortunately, no. I think it wasn't until... I always say that, I live in the Parkland bubble, and it wasn't until the shooting that bubble popped. And it was that I became aware of, you know, more of my surroundings and the laws around me and the issues of gun violence occurring in America. And, you know, growing up, you know, I was in fifth grade when Sandy Hook happened. Unfortunately, at the time, I didn't fully aware. I was like, well, wow, that's awful. Like, I can never imagine being in that position. I feel so bad for those people. But then all of a sudden it's like, all right, I'm going to go outside and, you know, go to the playground, because you're in a constant world, you know, imagining that that's not going to happen to you. A lot of the students from Douglas wanted the world to realize, like, hey, this can happen to you. We didn't think this was going to happen to us, and it did. You know, you need to know why and how to prevent it from happening to you. And that's the sad world that we live in, but that's what happened.
Nadia, same with you. I'm just curious, before did you pay attention to politics? Do you now?
Well, I've always had an interest in politics. I even planned to study it in college. Ever since I was, I think, elementary school, I've always been watching CNN. I'm always engaging in conversation with my parents about politics, and they just love that. So, like Lainey said, I was in fourth grade, and when the Sandy Hook shooting happened, I had the same reaction. I was like, that's horrible, like, these poor little kids. But then I was like, okay, like, that's never going to happen to me. And then I think that when the shooting happened, I just had even more of an interest, and I was even more determined to go and study politics. And especially with the election, like the 2016 election, I was really interested in politics. I really had to say, and I would always talk with my parents and other people, trying to debate and all that kind of stuff. I've always been into that kind of stuff. So I think that, especially after the shooting, I've had more of an interest in it.
Let's go back to the book. We'll finish up on these couple questions. Lainey, let me start with you. Have you had anybody talk to you about, have they read your piece? Have they read the book, read your piece, said anything to you? And who is this for? Who is this book? Who do you hope is going to read this book?
Well, the book was recently published, but however, I wrote the letter previously. So I think I wrote the letter possibly a week and a half, 2 weeks after the shooting. And I think this book is primarily to, the rest of the country. Like I was saying previously, it's more for them to realize, I think the country moves on too fast from these types of traumas, and it's a sad reality. They happen too often. So it's like, flip to new channel 12, like a shooting happened. All right, I'm going to go back to like the cooking channel. They move on so quickly and they forget about the after effects. We had to live the life after the shooting, and they don't always see that. And yes, the book highlights what happened on that day, but it also covers how the emotions we were feeling after the shooting. And I think that's, what the country fails to see. And I think it's more to make them realize, how we were feeling.
My targeted audience was really people that really didn't understand, a lot about the shooting. If they wanted to know more about, the deep, raw details and also, the aftermath and, I guess, the activism. There are many different types of stories in here, many different types of pieces of art. And I think that it really depicts how Parkland and Marjory Stoneman Douglas, how the community is now. And I think that that helps people that don't go to our school or that just aren't a part of the whole community. It helps them understand what's really going on and allows them to understand and have an understanding for students and community members. So
you're listening to students Lainey Steinhardt, Nadia Murillo, and English teacher Sarah Lerner from Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School. Their stories are part of the new book Parkland Speaks, which shares the experiences of MSD students and faculty in the aftermath of the Parkland shooting.
Sarah, for you as well, I just your thoughts on, do you think the students will go back and read it themselves, or do you think they want to put it behind them? Who should be reading this book?
I think everyone should be reading this book. I hope that the contributors have read the book, and if they haven't fully, I'm sure they will in time. It's a lot to take in one sitting, and I read through everything in stages, but I have not read the book cover to cover in one sitting. It's very heavy. I'm on Twitter probably more than I should be. I usually tweet while I'm teaching. So there has been such a positive response to the book by people I have never met, people who saw posts online and pre-ordered the book and received it all over the country, and which means a lot, because what the kids wrote, what I wrote, it's all very raw and very real, and this happened to us, and it's important that people see that.
One other thing I wanted to ask you is, because you edit the yearbook, and I wonder your approach to it. You're looking for those moments that define a year. How did you approach this yearbook, this last one that came out?
I was working on a spread on the 14th when the fire alarm went off. So we were about a month out from our final deadline, and during the 2 weeks that we were off, I spoke with my publisher, I spoke with my students and my editors, and we really needed to figure out what we were going to cover and how we were going to cover it, because we knew we needed to honor the victims, but we also needed to cover the vigils and all the banners that were being sent and all of the love and outreach that had been sent to us. So
once we came back to school after the 2 weeks off, I had to renumber and resubmit all of the pages. And we basically had to make a yearbook in 6 weeks because we had to shift everything to fit the victim profiles. And we had to move things around to accommodate for a second opening spread and a second closing spread and 7 spreads to 14 pages of everything that happened from the day of through the 2 weeks that we were off and coming back to school. So what would have been a gigantic book on its own at 428 pages ended up being 452 pages. And I did not teach the last few months of school because I couldn't. Nobody really wanted to learn anyway. It was very difficult for us to be back at school in the first place. And then to have to make this yearbook, the hugeness of that was not lost on me.
As the editor of the yearbook, what you're doing is collecting the stories that people are going to be looking back on the rest of their lives. You're collecting the history.
I don't take my job as a teacher and a yearbook advisor lightly. In every yearbook, we really try and be as error-free as possible, but there's always a kid's name who's spelled wrong or we left this club picture out accidentally. But we needed to make sure that last year's book was perfect and told the story of our year. Because looking back now, the 2017-2018 school year was defined by that single moment. But it was important to us to show that so many things, wonderful things, had happened prior to the 14th, and so many great things happened after the 14th.
Lainey, how do you define what the MSD community is and, you know, what it means to you, but what it's been for you and how it's helped you?
I actually moved to Parkland and going into eighth grade, so about 3 years ago now. The community of Parkland and the community of Marjory Stoneman Douglas is huge. It's a huge population. I've like coming from a small town in New Jersey to now Parkland, it's beyond. So I think, you know, just to define this community is just there's so much love that comes out of it. These people want to be there for this faculty and staff and students at Douglas. You know, I think an example of this is anything ranging from, you know, the local ice cream store being everything, every scoop of ice cream is free and any extra ice cream scoop goes back to some type of charity. You know, that's the type of community. Or another type of community is, hey, like if anyone just wants to, you know, just talk about their emotions, you know, my mom's having free counseling for anyone who wants to. That's a definition of community. Everyone in this town, I think we're just so supportive of one another, and it's just amazing to see the amount of love that radiates from us.
Nadia, as well as for you, I mean, how do you define what the MSD community is?
I just feel like it's anyone that has just supported MSD and just has just supported the school and helping us heal and comfort us. I feel that if they've tried to do any of that, then I feel that they're a part of the community. Like, no matter where you live, if, like, you just try to help us and the students and the teachers and parents and everything, then I feel that you're a part of the community. And MSD Strong just basically shows, like, that no matter what, like, no matter what the community could go through, like, we'll always be strong, we'll always be there for each other. And I think that that's just an amazing symbol, like, to show for the whole community.
Again, that was English teacher and yearbook advisor Sarah Lerner. We also heard from students Lainey Steinhardt and Nadia Murillo, all from Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School. They contributed to this new book called Parkland Speaks. It's a compilation of stories from 43 students and faculty from the school. And you can learn more about Lainey, Nadia, and Sarah on our Instagram at WLRN. You can also find out more about this conversation and the book on our social media at Facebook or Twitter at WLRN Sundial. Well, still to come, what is the best way to talk to your kids about school shootings and dealing with anxiety and trauma? We're going to try and define those answers for you next, coming up next on Sundial.
Be crazy, being down on all school days, wondering what will the you say now about us. Gunshots raining down in all classrooms, asking what will these fools do when there's nothing left but just dust. Where do we go from here? Change is near.
We're funded by WLRN members and by Conserve Art. Since 1951, professional art restoration and conservation of paintings, works on paper, and collectibles damaged by fire, flood, or accident. Insurance claims and conservation-grade framing are specialties. ConserveArt.net.
This week on WLRN's Friday Night Movie, it's a gun-slinging shoot-'em-up. When Randolph Scott heads into town to tussle with a trio of troublemaking train robbers in the action-adventure Rage at Dawn. Watch Rage at Dawn, Friday night at 8 on WLRN-TV, Channel 17.
Perez Art Museum Miami will host Art of the Party, honoring internationally acclaimed artist Christo, on March 9th. The event will feature three unique guest experiences and culinary collaborations. Tickets at pamm.org.
Welcome back to Sundial. I'm Luis Hernandez. For our listeners in South Florida, you again are listening on WLRN. We also welcome listeners of WGCU, NPR for Southwest Florida. Now, we've been talking about the Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School shooting that took the lives of 17 people, 14 students, and 3 teachers. During this time, there are many triggers that can bring back memories of that day for the survivors. The building, Valentine's Day decorations, I mean, name a few, there's so many. And at this time, it is important to provide resources for those in need of support and offer guidance to how to handle the trauma from this event in healthy ways. Dr. Raul Polson is a board-certified child and adolescent psychiatrist with the University of Miami Health System, where he provides mental health care to his patients. And we talked to him earlier today about how to deal with trauma, how to deal with depression and anxiety, especially after a school shooting. Dr. Polson, I mean, we're on the one-year anniversary of the Marjory Stoneman Douglas shooting. Help us understand what the students and the faculty who were there might be feeling on this anniversary and what might be triggering emotions.
A lot of these individuals who were present during that time may have been exposed to a significant, horrific event. And for them, it is hard to manage that event both emotionally and physically. Whenever we're exposed to events that are this severe and this drastic, our bodies try to compensate and try to understand it and try to react to it. And now, for some of these people who suffered through that tragic event, it's hard for them to go on day to day with the concern that this may happen again.
What do you tell people about the healthiest ways that they can manage their emotions, especially on an anniversary?
So for those who are significantly suffering, the first thing that I would recommend is to seek help. It's not easy to do this alone, and it's important to have the support system around you. Therapist, psychiatrist, psychologist, there's different types of mental health professionals who are available to be able to manage some of these symptoms and some of these reactions to this traumatic event.
What do you advise parents on how they should talk to their kids, especially those who were there at the school? Just there that day, what should they be talking to them about? What do they tell them?
The first recommendation that I would suggest to them and talk to them about is actually listening, being there for them, telling them, please tell me what you're feeling. Tell me what you're thinking about. What is this? How does this make you feel at the end of the day? And just listening to them. That in and of itself is supportive. And us as parents, the first gut reaction is to try to solve the problem, right? Give them a solution, try to help them in this difficult time. And it's very difficult to kind of step away from that because, again, we don't live through these traumatic events day in and day out. This is all new to us. But the first step to doing that, to being able to bridge some support towards them, is actually listening.
We heard from two of the Marjory Stoneman Douglas students earlier, Lainey Steinhardt and Nadia Murillo, and they referred to not being able to escape the Parkland bubble. They're concerned that there's that constant exposure to the social media, to the news stories. So in what ways does that impact a community's ability to heal if it's always being discussed?
So that gets a little bit more complicated, unfortunately, because when you grow up in a community, your support system is in that community. And to be able to remove yourself from that community because of the exposure to this violent event can be very drastic, can be very life-changing for a lot of us. So it's a difficult maneuver that we have to consider. The positive side that is kind of a healing ability of being in a community, especially if everybody experienced the same situation, is that people there can understand or are a little bit more understanding about what you're experiencing and are more understanding about how you're dealing and managing those emotions.
Everybody relates.
Exactly.
And what do you tell people about how to even begin looking for that help?
In regards to anybody who has been affected personally, because there may be family members who live far away and live in another state. For those individuals, if they do have medical insurance, I would recommend contacting their medical insurance provider and getting contacted through the behavioral specialists that carry that insurance.
That was Dr. Raul Polson. He's a board-certified psychiatrist and board-eligible child and adolescent psychiatrist with the University of Miami Health System. He talked to us about healthy ways that students, teachers, and parents can deal with trauma on the year anniversary of the Parkland shooting. And if you need support also, WLRN has assembled a list of free mental health and trauma resources that you can find on our website, WLRN.org. Well, still to come, it is hard to discuss school shootings without talking about gun laws. And we're going to talk with a Democratic congressman from Parkland about gun laws already being discussed in Congress. That's coming up next on Sundial.
Asphyxiate the mind, breaking barriers. The tears begin to rise, breaking characters. Open up your eyes and see what you Christ.
When improv meets Broadway, you get Broadway's next hit musical, coming February 23rd to Bailey Hall. It's been described as being like nothing you've ever seen before, because it's made up on the spot. Prompted by suggestions from the audience, the cast promises to keep you laughing with original songs, dancing, and comedy. Broadway's next hit musical is coming live to the stage at Bailey Hall Saturday, February 23rd. Details at baileyhall.org. Funded in part by the Broward Cultural Division.
We're funded by WLRN members and by Willie the Bee Man. Proper bee removal requires two steps, locating the hive and extracting the honeycomb. Willie the Bee Man, bee removal specialists offering live removal when possible. Details at 1-855-466-BEES.
If you're like those of us who have our smartphones with us just about everywhere we go these days, why not take WLRN along with you as well? Just download the WLRN app and you'll have access to NPR News, WLRN News features, and WLRN Classical anytime you like.
Welcome back to Sundial. I'm Luis Hernandez. And again, I want to welcome listeners of our sister station, WGCU in Fort Myers. Thank you for allowing us the opportunity to share with you our coverage today of the one-year anniversary of the Marjorie Stoneman Douglas shooting. You know, when we talk about school shootings, and unfortunately there are too many, it's hard not to talk about the issue about guns. It's a national debate. Once again, there are bills in Congress to try and make background checks mandatory and to put limits on high-capacity magazines. Congressman Ted Deutsch, Democrat representing District 22, which includes Parkland, is behind one of those bills, and he joins us now. Congressman Deutsch, thank you so much for the time today.
It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Before we get into your bill and the gun debate, you know, we've heard from students, staff, parents, a lot of people about the significance of this day, the one-year anniversary, and, of course, all the emotions that go with it. What's going through your mind right now as you reflect on 1 year after the shooting? What are the conversations that you've had with your constituents?
Well, I've had conversations with families. I've been in contact with students and members of the community. And more than anything else, today is a day to remember the lives lost. This is not just about numbers, although 17 is an enormous number, and it was a horrific tragedy. But every one of the people who died had a story, and they had accomplished a lot in their lives already, and there was so much more that every one of them could have done. And we honor their memory and recognize just how devastating February 14th, 2018 was for their families, for their loved ones, and really for the entire community.
We heard from parents, and we've been asking them if they feel that after 1 year, everything that's happened in Tallahassee, all the discussion about trying to make schools safer, we've asked them if they feel, if they believe that schools are safer. And I want to know your thoughts. Do you think that schools are safer from this sort of tragedy?
Well, there have been some steps that have been taken, but not enough. A big issue that requires us to look at everything. It's about access to mental health, and we need to do a better job getting access to mental health for everyone in schools. It's about accountability and making sure that when decisions are made that result in this case in tragedy, that we learn from them, and that there's accountability for the people who made those decisions. And it's about school safety and making sure that the schools are designed well and that there are steps in place to keep kids safe. But it's also about guns and gun safety and the fact that 40,000 people die every year as a result of guns. We have to be talking about all of this in order to really keep our school safe and keep our kids safe, whether they're in school or whether they're simply standing on the street corner, walking down the street.
And we talk about gun legislation. So you, along with Democratic Senator Bob Menendez of New Jersey, have reintroduced a bill going after high-capacity gun magazines. This is called the Keep Americans Safe Act. What's the reason behind focusing on magazines that hold more than 10 rounds of ammunition?
Well, because these magazines were meant for the battlefield. They're not meant for our communities. The only purpose is to maximize the number of targets that it hits. And there's no reason that anyone needs to be able to fire off 30 or 40 or 100 rounds in a row without reloading. Seconds matter. It takes seconds to reload a weapon. And in the case of a shooting, those seconds could be enough to save lives. And that's why it's why it's so important. And it's why Senator Menendez and I are working so hard to pass this. If you just think about the high capacity magazines that have been used in so many of the mass shootings, and realize that if there were an opportunity, even a chance where the gunman had to reload to give someone the chance to come in to stop it, lives could have been saved. That's why we need to take this action now.
You know what the critics have said to you and will continue to say, that any sort of limitation is a violation of the Second Amendment. So how do you respond to that?
Well, they're wrong. That's what I say. And don't just listen to me. I reminded my colleagues in the House just this week in response to that criticism. Don't take it from me. Take it from Justice Scalia. Justice Scalia, as conservative a member of the court as there's ever been, recognized that the Second Amendment, just like all of our other rights, have limits, and nothing that we're proposing is unconstitutional. But more important than that, nothing that we're proposing, whether it's this or background checks or any of the other numbers of pieces of legislation we could talk about, none of them do anything to interfere with the rights of an individual, a law-abiding individual, to exercise the Second Amendment rights. What we're trying to do is save lives and keep guns out of the hands of dangerous people, and in this case, make it harder for those dangerous people to kill a lot of people at one time. That doesn't violate anyone's constitutional rights, but it certainly can help keep our communities safe.
Yeah, Democrats do have the House, but do you think you have the votes?
Well, it's one step at a time. We late last night, after about 10 hours of debate, the House Judiciary Committee passed out of our committee universal background checks, which is just a simple bill to close the existing loopholes so that everyone who buys a gun has to go through a background check. So that we can be sure that dangerous people can't get their hands on guns. That passed last night. That's going to go to the floor. It's got overwhelming support, bipartisan support. We're going to pass it out of the House and then send it to the Senate.
But, and do you, gonna...
But we're going to move on just really quickly. We're going to move on to other pieces of legislation. I am confident that the House, with its new gun safety majority, will be able to move pieces of legislation. Then they'll go to the Senate where.
Okay, but that's the thing. Yeah. You talk about the Senate, and Senate Leader Mitch McConnell has a 93% rating from the NRA, which has aggressively lobbied against any kind of legislation in the past. How right. are you going to get it heard in the Senate?
Well, here's the difference between this moment in time and where we were a year ago, before Parkland, before the courageous parents stepped up to advocate, before the student-led movement helped to change the composition of the House. Now we're at a point where senators have now seen what happens if they continue to sit back, take their contributions from the gun lobby, and ignore the pleas of their constituents to take action to keep communities safe. That's what so many of my colleagues did in the House for years. And because of the leadership of these students and the movement they started, 40 of them are no longer there. So the senators in our own state, for example, Senator Rubio and Senator Scott, they represent the same constituents that I do. And they're going to hear from those constituents. They're going to hear from those kids. And they're going to be pressed to make clear whose side they're on, the side of those of us who are advocating for common sense measures to keep people from dying, or the side of the gun companies that just want to maximize their profits. Right. It's a different world than it was a year ago. And that's the case, sadly, because of the horrific tragedy that we endured down here in South Florida.
I'm talking with Democratic Congressman Ted Deutsch, representing District 22, which includes Parkland. The representative is back in Broward County today on the one-year anniversary of the shooting that occurred at Marjory Stoneman Douglas High School. And we're talking about proposals in Congress to address gun control safety and prevent further school shootings. Congressman, let's say it gets through the House and the Senate. It gets to the president's desk. What do you think he'll do?
Well, I don't know what he'll do about the high capacity magazine ban, but I feel like I know, and I certainly would remind people what the president said about background checks in the White House to me and lots of other members of the House and Senate who were gathered there with him. The president, after Parkland, sat three seats away from me and said, "I don't understand why we don't have universal background checks." He pointed to some of my colleagues and said, "I think you're afraid of the NRA. You shouldn't be afraid of the NRA." And then he said, "I'm going to be the president who gets this done." Now, I understand he backtracked from that and he did it quickly, but he's on record acknowledging that what we're trying to do in requiring universal background checks is not just popular, it makes sense, and it can save lives. And if we get that bill to his desk, all we're going to have to do is urge him to rewatch his own statements, right. maybe several times, I'm not sure, and hopefully he would do the right thing. But all of us are going to work together to get to that point and to make sure he does do the right thing.
Real quickly, let's get back. You had mentioned mental health issues. Now, there are some who believe that the shooting at Marjory Stoneman Douglas may have been prevented if there were more mental health services available to students. Have you proposed any legislation on this? How do we approach the issue of increasing mental health services in schools, especially?
Yeah, well, we've last year, after the tragedy at Stoneman Douglas, we passed the Stop School Violence Act. It's a piece of legislation that I introduced. I introduced it weeks before February 14th. Unfortunately, it took this tragedy to make it a law. But what it does is provide, it uses some existing programs and encourages communities around the country. It provides grant money for communities to put these programs in place to help identify students who pose a threat, students that might need some help. That's been rolled out, and we're just starting to see how that's implemented. I'm going to be reintroducing the Stop School Violence Act of 2019 to build upon some of what works around the country, increased funding to get mental health counselors into schools, the fact that we can't expect guidance counselors, as is the case in so many places, we can't expect guidance counselors to be the mental health counselors that students need. We actually have to make the investment. And what happens is, after a school shooting, we talk about mental health and access to mental health care right at the beginning, because it's something that everyone agrees on. Unfortunately, it tends to be the first thing that gets pushed to the side. Our legislation that we're working on right now will provide lots of ways to recognize what works around the country and to help give school districts around the country the resources they need to implement them.
And one last thing, sure. Congressman, is yesterday Governor Ron DeSantis called for an audit of Broward County schools by a special grand jury to look at controversial programs like the Promise Program. And that's the program that's supposed to prevent the school-to-prison pipeline, help teens stay out of jail. And we reported that the Parkland shooter was supposedly in that program. Now, what are your concerns, or what are your thoughts on how Superintendent Robert Runcie is leading the school district and also the security measures that have to be in place in Broward County schools?
Well, I've spent an enormous amount of time with the families, and first and foremost, what they worry about is making sure that the schools are safe going forward, and that there is full accountability for what happened. And it's frustrating that that there wasn't an independent review conducted sooner. The MSD Commission did its work. I think the school district could have conducted its own investigation into what happened. There have been some steps taken, but this is a district-wide and a statewide issue. It's not just about Marjory Stoneman Douglas. We've got to be looking at every school in Broward County and ask whether they have the safe spaces that they need, ask whether they have the single point of entry and whether there are adequate resources and resource officers.
And
this is something that affects everyone, not just at Stoneman Douglas. We have to use this tragedy to figure out all of the things that went wrong. And that's imperative. But then we have to act, and we have to act quickly to make sure that every school in the district and throughout South Florida and the state of Florida as well has taken steps to protect their kids.
And real quickly, in 30 seconds, tell me your thoughts on the future of the Never Again movement led by the MSD students. What do you think the role is for them?
Oh, they're just getting started. That's what's so incredible about this. I was with these kids at the very beginning when their focus every single day was, how do we save lives? What can we do to save lives? Then they built a movement and they had a march and they interacted with millions of people around the country and around the world. They changed the composition of the House. They've passed dozens of laws in states around the country. Congress is now acting and they're just getting started. More and more young people every year are becoming involved. They're going to have the right to vote. They're going to vote based on this issue because they're tired of seeing their friends die.
I have to
this
jump
Never
in.
Again movement has only just begun.
I have to jump in there. Democratic Congressman Ted Deutscher, representing District 22, which includes Parkland. Congressman, thank you so much. I appreciate the time.
Thanks so much for having me.
And that is our program, Sundial, for this Thursday, February 14th, spending the day talking about the one-year anniversary of the Marjory Stoneman Douglas shooting. We want to thank all the listeners in Southwest Florida at our sister station, WGCU, in Fort Myers and Naples. Thank you so much for tuning in today. And, of course, you can share your thoughts on the program. Always find us on Facebook or Twitter at WLRN Sundial. Right now you're listening to Shine by Marjory Stoneman Douglas Students. That's the program. I'm Luis Hernandez. Thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful Thursday.
You will be something special.